Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Yeah. Hope you backed it in. Hope you denimed up, and I hope you finish your week strong. We had a nice show today. Game one of the trilogy finally kicked off. KD and the Warriors took the lumber to the Cavaliers, and even Rihanna took some shrapnel. Plus, Eldrick's DUI video keeps coming. The nightmare week that will not end for the Cat. Three excellent interviews today as well. SI's Lee Jenkins came in. He talked up the finals. Robert Lucetich gave some excellent insight on Tiger Woods. And we had a tremendous conversation with Denver Broncos linebacker Shane Ray. Lots to get to. Alvy, get at it. Do what you do best. Starting with game one last night. 13 down, 3 to go for the Dubs. And that beatdown that Golden State laid on Cleveland last night was pretty much the NBA's worst nightmare. Given that we had suffered through arguably the worst postseason ever, Golden State curb-stomping Cleveland in a short series would be pretty catastrophic. After all, this matchup, the trilogy, the so-called rematch, was the only thing that got us through this unwatchable NBA postseason. Well, that and the NHL postseason. But that's fine. That's fine because one great series was going to make us all forget all the crappy ones that came before it. Unless this was crappy too. And from the looks of things, it may very well be.
Livingston to the timeline, and it will run out. And the Warriors continue to be unbeaten in the postseason. 13-0. And they have taken game one with a final score of 113-91. Draw first blood in the 2017 NBA Finals.
Warriors radio. Yeah, I know, Cavs fan. Only one game. I also know that the Cavaliers were blown out in games one and two last year in the finals. So, I'm not saying this series is over. Well, actually, that's exactly what I'm saying. This series is over. Because that's not simply a matter of one bad night for Cleveland. I mean, don't get that part twisted. They were bad. Really bad. Terrible defensively. Terrible taking care of the basketball, even worse shooting it. But it's not just one bad night. It turns out that's a really bad matchup for the Cavaliers. And let's be clear about one more thing. This is no rematch. I made this point all week long. This is a very different Golden State team than the one Cleveland came back on a year ago. Steph Curry was busted up last year at this time. The Cavaliers did not get the real version of Curry in the finals. They are right now, though, because now he's healthy. Now he's rested. Draymond Green is not going to lose his head and snap like he did last year. They're going to have to deal with him every single night. Just as they're going to have to deal with a team that is much hungrier and way more focused after letting that 3-1 lead get away. But obviously, the biggest reason that Golden State is different and that this is no rematch is Kevin Durant, and we all saw that last night.
Curry now, right wing goes to Durant. Durant will fire. It's a three from the right corner. Durant's 14 of 26 from the floor, and he's got 38.
See, that's the reason everybody freaked out when Durant decided to go to Golden State, because folks had to know that he'd show up on the biggest stage and dominate like he did without even trying. And there's nothing worse than all the lames going on and on before game one about how the pressure is on Durant, that he was the one that decided to take the easy way out, that he was the one that didn't have a ring. Did it look like he was feeling any pressure? Hell no, because he wasn't. This is exactly what the guy wanted and why he went there, exactly what he signed up for, and he goes 38-8-8, and he's never looked better. Pressure. Why would this guy feel any pressure? He knows that nobody on the Cavs can guard him. Just as he knows that he can get to the rack whenever he wants against Cleveland. Those six dunks are evidence of that. And by the way, anytime one guy has more dunks than his entire team has turnovers, you know the other guy is getting curb stomped. And the only thing more lame than thinking that Durant might choke out under the pressure was thinking that he wouldn't be able to fit in or subjugate his game for the greater good. He got his, yet he still moved the ball well, as they all do. He's a perfect fit. He made the right decision, and they're obviously a much different, much better team with him than they are without him. So this is no rematch. A rematch is when the two same teams play each other again. There's nothing about this Golden State team that's the same, really. They're not the same Warriors. And never mind being better than Cleveland, this Warrior team is destined to go down as an all-time great. Only question remaining, once it's all over, is are they going to be the best ever? Yeah, I know, it's only one game. It's only one game, but I've already seen enough. The Cavaliers are not beating these guys. Now, Cavalier fan, you're probably hot. You don't want to hear it. You can tell me your team had a terrible night, and they'll play better. That they can't play any worse. You'd be right about that. That's true. They certainly will play better. But the fact is, as bad of a beatdown as that was, it could have been so much worse because the Warriors could have played much better. They won by 23, but they missed 15 layups in the first half. Draymond Green didn't even make his first bucket until the end of the third quarter. Klay Thompson had one of his worst nights ever shooting the ball, and only two Warriors were in double digits. So the focus shouldn't be on how much better the Cavaliers are going to play. It should be on how much better the Warriors can still play, because they knocked them the hell out without hitting them with anything near their best shot. They blew them out without playing anywhere near their best game. If it sounds like I'm laying it on pretty heavy, it's because it was that bad. It really was that bad. And don't con yourself into thinking, yeah, but it was only an 8-point game at halftime. Didn't matter. Lee Jenkins is my guest. Lee, it's always good to have you on the show. You know that. What's up, Lee?
Not much. How you doing, Jim? Thanks for having me.
Good to have you, Lee. Thanks for doing it. So as you think back, Lee, first on what you saw last night in Oakland, Lee, what was more striking to you? Kevin Durant going for 38, 8, and 8, or the fact that Cleveland had 20 turnovers and got absolutely killed in the paint?
It's Kevin Durant's presence, Jim, was the most striking, because I think we've spent now, it's been a full week, and there's been sort of hype for this matchup. This is Warriors-Cavs again, you know, the trilogy, the thrilogy, and you get out there and you sort of see him on the court and you realize this is really not like adding David West or adding Kyle Korver. I mean, this changes the fundamental fabric of that matchup and makes it nearly impossible for really for any team in the NBA, but even for the Cavs. I mean, it's like they need another LeBron James out there, which is essentially what Golden State has gotten with another Durant. And so this goes from kind of a heavyweight tilt with these two teams that could go back and forth to, I mean, at least for me, seeing what needs to be probably an improbable upset for Cleveland to be able to pull this off, and maybe for any team for the next foreseeable future.
Yeah, in terms of this being a heavyweight clash, it suddenly looks, Lee, like the Cavaliers are fighting out of their weight class. I mean, remember, they lost the first two games of last year's finals by a combined 48 points. Then they famously came back to win the whole thing. But did last night feel like something different? It sounds like it does.
It's not the deficit, because that won't bother them. It's more just... it's just a matchup. It's just how do you account for Durant in addition to all of those other people? And, I mean, look, Klay Thompson hasn't gotten going for a long time. Draymond Green didn't make a lot of shots last night. It's not as though, I suppose, they're completely invincible if those guys continue to struggle. And everything went wrong for the Cavs. I mean, they had nothing out of their bench. LeBron had all those early turnovers. They had this kind of strange defensive philosophy, it looked like, in the first half, where they were paying so much attention to the three-point line, they were essentially trading threes for dunks. And even against the Warriors, that's probably unwise. But just going forward, accounting for Durant, I mean, you had Harrison Barnes last year. The Cavs basically left him alone. He kind of shot Cleveland in some ways back into that series. Now you swap him out for Durant. Every time they switch onto him, he's attacking it. He's playmaking. It seems like something's going to have to happen. Like there's going to have to be a sprained ankle. Somebody's going to have to go cold It felt all the way, I think, like Golden State would have to play poorly and the Cavs would have to play well. It wasn't just that the Cavs had to play well.
Lee Jenkins joining us. You know, you had that famous cover story on Kevin Durant 4 years ago where he told you, quote, "I've been second my whole life. I was the second best player in high school. I was the second pick in the draft. I've been second in the MVP voting three times. I came in second in the finals. I'm tired of being second. I'm not going to settle for that. I'm done with it," end quote. How do you think then that he's approaching these NBA finals himself?
I think the pressure on these guys, and really when I say these guys, it's kind of just LeBron and Durant. You know, the pressure that they have from the outside to win it all, when they get, I feel like superstar basketball players are almost like, you know, women with a biological clock. When they get to be 27, 28, that age, and they haven't won one yet, I think there starts to become a real itch. And you saw it with LeBron when he went to Miami. It feels very similar in some ways with Durant going to Golden State. There is there is a pressure that comes from the outside for those guys who have the huge sponsorships and the massive followings. And Durant put himself in a position where he didn't leave a whole lot to chance. It doesn't mean that it can't go the other way, that the Cavs couldn't pull off. I mean, upsets happen in sports, but that's what this would have to be. This would have to be a huge upset. And, you know, Durant seems, he seems fairly at ease, and he should be, given that he has such a massive margin for error. I mean, last night he carried the show, he carried that team, but another night it could easily be somebody else. And that's the luxury of playing with three other superstars. You don't have that stress every night. You know, the feeling James Harden has when he drives to the arena, he knows it has to be him all the time. Russell Westbrook, same way. That's how it was for Kobe. That's, I think, how it is for LeBron now. For Durant, the dynamic has shifted. He's created something different for himself.
Clones, give me 1 minute because I need to talk to you about Ferguson. Ferguson is the nation's largest distributor of plumbing products, but their playbook goes deeper than plumbing. Pro contractors know to depend on Ferguson for the best in waterworks, HVAC, and facilities maintenance products in the game. Ferguson has over 20,000 knowledgeable associates always working for you. Combine that with Ferguson's 1,400 locations and 24/7 online ordering, and you will always have the home team advantage. See why the pros pick Ferguson at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Lee Jenkins, senior writer for SI, joining us. So in terms of LeBron, Lee, you've covered him extensively. What do you think that he was thinking after last night's game?
I think he was thinking that Kevin Durant is probably every bit what he knew he was back in 2012 when these teams faced each other. Durant and LeBron were kind of close back then. I mean, Durant worked out in Akron with LeBron. That's not necessarily the same, but I remember a quote from LeBron, an interview he gave me, I think it was way back in 2011 or maybe it was 2012, and he said, you know, there's somebody somewhere out there coming for me. And I know where he is. He's in Oklahoma. So he's prepared for this. As many great players have come for the LeBron James throne, Paul George, Derrick Rose, you know, you get kind of a new one every year. Durant was really always the only credible challenger. And it, look, if the dynamic is such where, I think somebody mentioned this the other day, like what if this isn't, I mean, everybody's talking about Lakers-Celtics, what if this is now that Lakers-Bulls series, like where you had Jordan kind of taking that mantle from Magic and running with it. I'm not going to compare Kevin Durant to Michael Jordan, but when you look at the way the Warriors are built, it looks like it could be a runaway train.
Right. So if it is that, if they're a runaway train, if it's, you know, not just one game and they make quick work of the Cavs, what's that then say about Golden State as a team, and what's it say about the state of the rest of the league?
I think it depends what you want out of your basketball. It depends what you want out of sports when you watch it. If you want it to be performance art, if you want to feel like you're going to a play or something, then this is wonderful. I mean, they play an amazing style of basketball. It's aesthetically beautiful to watch. If you want real competition, Adam Silver did his press conference last night. He said these things always work themselves out, and they do. They typically do. But I don't know that we've seen something like this. I don't know if we've ever seen a team with four. We've seen teams with three, but it's not like, oh, three, four, same thing. I mean, Kevin Durant changes everything when you add a player like that. So, you know, I don't know that something will happen to derail this team. I mean, the NBA put in this cap spike. NBA and the union put in this cap spike based on that $24 billion TV deal. And they created a max slot. They didn't do it on purpose, but it was a coincidence of timing. The Warriors were able to use that max slot to sign a guy who, you know, was clearly ready to win championships, almost desperate to win championships. So they bring him in, and now I think the NBA could be looking at an issue for the next few years if you are the kind of fan who wants to see competition. I mean, for other markets, I did a story this week for SI, you know, there are a lot of GMs who are saying, this is essentially like we're trying to make the conference finals, that's the goal, that it's like, let's stay out of their bracket. Let's stay out of Kentucky's bracket. And I think that's a pretty big problem for the league.
Lee Jenkins joining us. I think so too, Lee. I think it really is a big problem. But just to play devil's advocate, the league just set a new attendance record for the third straight year. This year's TV ratings are better than last year's. Although it might be hard to top last year's finals without getting to a Game 7, I mean, if the fans are still showing up and they're still turning on their TVs, how big of a problem?
Now, they are for now, and I feel like LeBron can do all things, right? And yeah, and maybe he can. I think it's a little weird that it's like it's almost like Mortal Kombat for him. Like, oh, he can, you know, dig out his superpowers and take on Durant also. But look, moving forward, I think the question is more about a year down the road or 2 years down the road. We have a huge luxury tax bill, the Warriors, but they'll be able to afford a big luxury tax bill. When you think about the gate that they get, their new arena, you know, their popularity overall and the money they're bringing in. So they're in kind of a different situation, and they're able to sort of change the playing field that way. Look, I don't want to like proclaim this series over yet, but if there is sort of a Globetrotters Washington Generals dynamic that the league faces, I'm not really sure how they necessarily roll that back.
Yeah, I kind of do want to proclaim that series over already, but I know what you're talking about, Lee. And even if I point out that the attendance is up and ratings are up, I still think this is an issue. But what about this? I mean, we're talking about for instance, when the Big Three were assembled in Miami, they were talking about not one, not two, not three, you know, seven or eight titles. They looked like they would dominate that league forever, and they broke up 4 years later. Oklahoma City, Lee, had a juggernaut in the making after the 2012 finals in Durant, Harden, and Russell Westbrook. They never got back. So when you look at the future, and you did touch on the luxury tax bills and the fact they've got a lot of cash coming in, I mean, is it inevitable that Golden State and Cleveland will dominate for years, or could this swing back the other way?
I don't think it's inevitable that Cleveland will dominate for years, and Cleveland's still got a window left. Yeah, I mean, they could decide they don't want to pay the luxury tax bill in a couple years. You know, a guy like Klay Thompson may decide that, you know, he doesn't want to play Harrison Barnes' role or, you know, whatever he's doing here forever. You know, there could be unrest. I mean, that always is a possibility in the NBA. And listen, with the ratings and the attendance, you're right. Those numbers are pretty good. But you also had local ratings that were down this year throughout the league. You also have TV partners that aren't thrilled when every series is four or five games. But, no, the NBA isn't suffering, and the stars still are able to drive it. And I think Westbrook and Harden kind of created a nice distraction all year where it became sort of about the individual play, because that's sort of the dynamic that's been set up is you have the super teams and you have these other teams with their one star, and their one star is sort of allowed to put on these incredible spectacles, and they're fun to watch. But again, this is sort of what happens when you have, you know, this inherent imbalance. And Miami's a tough comparison, Jim. When they won their first title, Mario Chalmers was their fourth leading scorer and Norris Cole was their fifth. I mean, that's a far cry from Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala.
That's the truth, isn't it? And then you got Klay Thompson. One last thought, Lee. You brought him up. I mean, Klay, let's give Klay credit. He didn't shoot the ball well last night, but I thought he played well. He's doing an awful lot for them defensively. And look the hell out if he breaks out of that slump. I mean, then what does that series look like? But what's going on with Klay right now?
You know, I wonder sometimes, Jim, if he – and I love – you know, the championship parades are great and the rings are great. But I do wonder when I look at him if he thinks – maybe I should have missed a couple shots in that game six last year, that conference final. Because his role, I mean, you knew somebody would sacrifice. And that quote he had after Durant signed, where he said, nobody's sacrificing anything. We're not sacrificing. It's like there's rhythm that these guys get in. There are looks that they're used to getting. There are spots on the floor that they're used to be. And when you have a star like Durant, that changes. The floor tilts in a different direction. And to kind of pretend that this prolonged slump he's in, you know, is not the result of being potentially squeezed a bit, I think is pretty naive. That stroke is too good. He's done too many things for me to chalk it up as, you know, some kind of mechanical issue or that he's forgotten how to shoot. And so that he is the guy. I've always felt like he was the guy who was going to have to sacrifice the most, and with time, you know, may be the one who's a little bit uncomfortable being a fourth guy. I mean, Klay Thompson's hardly even mentioned anymore. It's like he's one of the best players in this league. He's one of the best shooters in the league. And he is now basically Harrison Barnes.
Lee Jenkins, senior. Got a Tiger Woods update for you. I mentioned that the Cats zonked out zombie act did not end out on the street early Memorial Day Monday. He was cuffed. He was brought in where he had to stand in front of more cameras and take more tests. We saw the dash cam video, but he had to get in front of cameras again. Unfortunately for him, that footage dropped last night like some bonus feature on a director's cut DVD. I mean, 4 days since the DUI, and we're still talking about it. We're still talking about it because fresh information continues to pour out. I said it yesterday. I'll say it again right now. Everything we're seeing and hearing right now is exactly why Tiger's team was wearing out the blower, trying to find out how much video the authorities had on their guy. The mugshot was bad. The police report was worse. The dash cam video was an all-time nightmare. But the nightmare clearly is not over because now there's video of Eldrick getting booked. And if you thought this dude might have been scared sober after being woken up in his car and slammed in the back of theirs, then you would be wrong. Because 2.5 hours after the arrest, this sleepwalker is still on a different planet. Listen to one of the officers trying to get him to properly use a simple breathalyzer.
I need you to make a tight seal with your lips and blow directly. Watch, look. Throw it back into that tip until I tell you to stop. Blow. Blow out. Blow out. Don't suck it. Blow out. Okay. Take a breath in. Now blow out. Blow out. Good. There you go. Keep going. 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 Keep blowing. Keep blowing. Keep blowing. Keep blowing. Okay, that's good.
That's good? That shouldn't have been that hard. I mean, she keeps telling him, blow out, blow out. No, don't suck it. Blow out, blow out, blow out. I mean, did she whistle at him to get his attention? Focus, focus. I mean, this guy still doesn't even know where the hell he is. You can hear her coaching him through the simplest act ever, and he can barely do it. Then she tells him to go back and have a seat and wait for the second test. But listen very carefully. The audio is not great, but if you listen, you can hear it. He's confused why he can't get himself out of his handcuffs.
Just go back and have a seat, and I'll call you back up again for the second one.
Sir, go ahead and keep standing.
You just have to stand. Just stay standing here, okay?
I can't unlock my two bracelets.
Don't worry.
Okay, don't worry. We're going to take those. We're going to take them off in a minute, but you got to keep them on for right now, okay? So, right there. Unlock your bracelet. All right, here you go again.
She's mocking him. She literally is mocking him. Did you hear what he said? I can't unlock my bracelets.
I can't unlock my two bracelets.
Right. I mean, technically, they are bracelets. They're silver bracelets. You know, like Tiffany silver bracelets. Except they're handcuffs. That's the whole point. You can't unlock them. And at the end of it, she mocks him. Like he can't unlock his bracelets. Dude just said, I can't unlock my bracelets. Right, because you're under arrest. That's how those bracelets work. You're not supposed to be able to unlock them. And you're under arrest because they found you napping it out and seemingly pilled up, hanging halfway onto the road in a beat-up sled only a few hours before that. You're under arrest because you tried to walk into the street when they asked you to do the ABCs. This is why you cannot unlock your bracelets. Now, what is interesting about all the video is that he did show some flashes of lucidity. And I mean flashes, and there weren't very many, and they were quick. But give this guy some credit. He did get through the ABCs when he finally said them back on the street. I mean, it may have taken him a minute to get from A to and Z, and they had asked him 3 times, but he didn't manage to get through it. And then back at the station, when they first brought him in and they rolled some tape, they asked him some basic identification questions. And when they did so, he went from Tiger Woods to a full-on Dave Chappelle for a second.
Sir, will you please state your full name?
Eldrick Tom Woods.
Your height and weight?
6'1", 185.
Your hair and eye color?
Mostly brown and fading. And brown.
Dude! Where did that come from? Cats got jokes? Cats got jokes. Listen to that response. Hair color. Mostly brown and fading.
Sir, will you please state your full name?
Eldrick Tom Woods.
Your height and weight?
6'1", 185.
Your hair and eye color?
Mostly brown and fading. And brown.
She thought that was funny. Mostly brown and fading and brown. Wow, man. This guy's just a cut-up. Who knew Cat had jokes? For Team Tiger, this weekend cannot come soon enough. They need an off day from above the fold news. They need to keep their heads down, lay low, hope that that's the last of the video, and that somebody else does something just as reckless and just as stupid.
Quickly.
How about this also? How about the legal geniuses and those who are saying that the guy actually doomed himself by consenting to field sobriety tests? This from CNN, quote, "He would have been better off if he had refused all testing and requests for information by law enforcement." In other words, Woods' case was made against him not when police found him snoozing in his car, but after he started talking and consenting to tests. That's the take right there, that he doomed himself when he started to consent to field sobriety tests. Great take, counselor. Now, here's an even better one. Tiger doomed himself by getting behind the wheel of a car under the influence. The best way to beat a driving under the influence rap is to just not drive under the influence. If you need any other brilliant legal analysis, you know where to find me. You're cracking on a guy for not knowing his legal rights or how to protect them. The guy can't even tell you who he is or where he is. Man, this guy, if he had only just not consented to all those field sobriety tests. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't even know, Roy, that you didn't have to. It seems to me that if an authority or a cop pulls me over and asks me to do something, generally I would just do it. So as not to make it worse. I guess you don't have to do it.
What are we doing?
Instead of trying to remember what you're doing, I guess, just don't do it in the first place. Or better yet, just don't get smashed up on alcohol or drugs or pills. That way you don't have to remember your Miranda rights. You don't have anything to worry about. Quote, "He would have been better off if he had refused all testing and requests for information by law enforcement." Right. Actually, he would have been better off had he not gotten behind the wheel of that car under the influence. We are moving Shane Ray. I'm not sure where to, but someplace. Romy, the Cavs blew it. They blew it. Blew it. Blew it. Blew it. They don't suck, but they blew it. Blue, 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 blue. Oh, wow. Signed Cat's breathalyzer officer.
Keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going.
She's laughing at him.
Keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep blowing. Keep blowing, keep blowing, keep blowing. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, she went back home to her roommate or her husband or her partner or whatever and said, and the person said, "How was your day?" Awesome. Best day ever.
Don't suck it, blow out.
Yeah, again, my man sounds in a bad way. Is that not him also again going OJ in the background? Robert Lucetich is my guest. Robert, great to have you back. How are you?
Always good to be in the jungle, Romy. And, sadly, it is Tiger that we're talking about. And sadly, it's not about what's going on with his golf game these days, but just what's become of him.
No, Robert, it's so true, because nearly every single day this week, we have seen the release of more video and more information about him and the arrest. But why don't we go back to the beginning of the week? What was your reaction when you first heard the news that he had been arrested for DUI at 3 o'clock in the morning in Florida?
Well, look, I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I was shocked. I think that we know that in 2009, when he backed that Escalade into the fire hydrant on Thanksgiving, he was taking Vicodin back then, also Ambien. His wife told the police that what was going on. He passed out. There was obviously a domestic dispute involved there too. But Vicodin, I think one of the things that frankly is America's sort of hidden dirty secret is opioid addiction, and it's so easy to get painkillers. This guy's had a lot of surgeries. I'm sure he's had a lot of pain over the last 7, 8, 9 years. And, I just know it's very, very difficult to get off those pills, and they're very addictive. So I can't say that I was shocked. Look, when you see the footage it's just sad. The most overwhelming emotion was sadness. Tiger Woods is 41. He's not 71. He's not 61. He's not 81. He's 41. And for a golfer, that should still be in his prime. But when you look at that mugshot, I mean, it's just, again, I was just really overcome with sadness.
Robert Lucetis joins us. So when you look at that mugshot, you're overcome with sadness. What do you think Tiger thinks when he sees that mugshot? Or will he never see that, and will he just try to block the whole thing out?
Well, look, I mean, my hope is that he does look at that and he realizes what has transpired. I mean, the irony in this is that this man, for me, I think, was the most in-control athlete I've ever seen. He was in control of everything, and he won everything. But beyond that, he controlled his emotions. He controlled the cauldron of Sunday afternoons at a major, which overcomes most players. But he controlled everything, and now he can't control anything. He's very out of control, and I think that in some ways, I look at things like this and I think of it as a cry for help. And I think that anyone that gets behind the wheel, now thankfully there was no alcohol involved, but still, getting behind the wheel in that condition, it's just, I can only interpret that as a cry for help. I mean, who does that? And where was he going at 3 a.m.?
Robert Lucetis joining us. Where was he going? Why was it so important to be behind the wheel? And what do you do? What are you doing getting behind the wheel in that kind of condition? You know, to this issue of control, it's interesting because that personal scandal was in 2009, but then he did come back and he led the money list in 2013. So he did come back from a physical standpoint, but did he ever make it back from that emotionally and psychologically?
No, I think that spiritually he never returned. He was never the same Tiger Woods as he was pre-scandal. And I've maintained this forever. And there are those who want to give Tiger the benefit of the doubt, who say that the injuries, it was all about the injuries, or it was about a swing change. I mean, these things were all factors for sure. But the reality is that he believed in Tiger Woods, and then suddenly he didn't. And I think Michael Jordan had a very interesting thing to say about what was wrong with Tiger a number of years ago. And he says that, you know, he wishes he could erase the whole thing, which means the scandal. And I think the fact that, you know, that in the end it's embarrassment and it's humiliation. Those were the two things that I think that overcame him. And you talk about the year that he won five times and he was player of the year. And I was there for all of those. And certainly he played, you know, he played phenomenally. But let's cut to the chase. That year, three times he had a chance on the weekend at majors, and he could not deliver. And that's when I knew that this was bigger than anyone really realized. I think he realizes it, but certainly that most people realize that coming back isn't just about having your golf game. It's about having the strength of mind and the strength of character. And I think that somehow he lost that.
Robert Lucetis joining us for a few more moments. You know, Robert, this point about him being stubborn, he certainly is that. There's being stubborn, though, and then there's being in denial. For instance, many former athletes struggle with adjusting to life after their athletic career is over. Is any of that what Tiger is dealing with? For instance, does he know that on some level that his athletic career and being Tiger Woods, the guy who threw on the red shirt on Sunday and dominated, that that's over? He understands that, right?
Well, I don't think he does understand that, but that's also more of a sort of a product. Now, you're asking me, does he understand that? I think deep down, does he understand that? I think deep down, he probably knows that's true because he's been to the top of the mountain and he knows what it takes to get there. And I'm not sure that at 41, and given the state of his body, that he'll be able to do that. But I think that somewhere, part of him does want to at least give it another shot. And I think that if he gets into some sort of physical shape, let's not forget, he's just had spinal fusion surgery. I mean, this is the end of the road in terms of medical answers for his physical ailments. There is nothing left. If this doesn't work, it's over. So he's probably 3 months away from being able to turn, just actually making a turn. Forget about swinging a golf club. So we're really talking about, you know, next year and beyond. And then if he gets the physical stuff right, then he's going to have to sit down and face these demons. I mean, let's not forget, he had the chipping yips for a while. He had all kinds of sort of problems with his game. His game hasn't been at the right level for a long, long time. So there's a lot of barriers. But, I think that he might – I think he wants to give it another shot. And look, he deserves that. He has earned that right to do that.
You know, Robert, I wonder if in fact, and you hope it's rock bottom, you really hope this is rock bottom. I mean, in fact, could it get worse? Might this not be rock bottom, in your opinion?
Listen, that's always the case because, you know, again, what we're dealing with here, I think, is, sadly, I lost a sister to pills and alcohol, and I've seen it. I've seen, you know, the damage that it does. And once you get going down those slippery slopes, it's very, very, very difficult to come back and to bring a person back. So, you know, my hope is that this is rock bottom and he uses this as a wake up call and he turns it around. But, you know, like with everything, it needs to come from Tiger. There's no way that you can, you know, go to rehab if you don't want to be in rehab. We see examples of that over and over and over again. It really needs to be something that where he wakes up one day and says, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. So I think that, you know, that's my hope is that this is rock bottom. But look, yes, of course it's possible that it isn't.
Robert, I did not know about your sister. I'm very sorry to hear that. And really nice to have you on the program, though, to share your thoughts on Tiger Woods and everything else. It is definitely a very troubling story. Robert Lucetic,
it is indeed, Jim. It is indeed, and again, as I said, I mean, even if we never see him back as Tiger Woods, the great golfer, I personally hope that he finds some peace.
All right, I mentioned I've got some pretty good phone calls. Let's see what we have right here. Oh, looky here, Caleb in Green Bay. It's been a long time. It's been a very long time. He's smart this way. He picks his spots. It's been a long time. Let's find out what's going on, Caleb. Brother, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm well, Jim. What about yourself, man?
Awesome. All good.
Excellent. I'm going to go off the board a little bit today. It's taken a major news story to pull me out of hibernation and back into potential smack-off consideration. True love itself almost died this week, Jim. One of the greatest American love stories of all time nearly came to an end in front of our eyes. Not Tarek and Christina, not Chloe and whichever NBA player's soul that succubus is devouring these days, not JFK and Marilyn. Hell, it's not even Huma and Wiener. Jim, the news came down this week that Mary Kay Lapervo and Billy Fulau were hanging up the kinky yardstick and calling it a marriage. I, for one, was distraught. A lot of my clone buddies have gotten married this year. Jim, I know you and Janet are celebrating 20 years this summer. My parents just finished up 40 years in May. But every couple needs to take a hard look at each other and wonder, is it all worth it? What is true love if not a pedophile teacher sexually assaulting her 12-year-old student, getting pregnant by him, serving time in prison, then marrying him when he's 21. If that kind of pure, adulterated love can't make it in this world, what the hell chance do the rest of us have? But then, redemption. Salvation in the form of a New York Post article where Billy says the reason he filed for divorce is because he wants to sell weed. Seattle is so awesome. And the company he's trying to work for would
like... You don't like Mary Kay Letourneau brought you back into the jungle. That's what you've been waiting on. You're thinking to yourself, when am I going to call? When am I going to call? I really should make an appearance. You know, I want to participate. I want to be here. But man, I really need something. I need some reason to call that program. What's it going to be? Can't talk about the Packers. Not a whole lot going on there. Just OTAs. Not really into the Milwaukee Bucks. That's not my deal. I guess I could go clone on clone crime. Man, I wish something would break. I wish something would drop. What's it going to be? Oh, Mary Kay Letourneau. There you go. That's the thing I've been waiting for. Rome's going to want that update. Mary Kay Letourneau. You all know that story. So she and Billy aren't going to make it work any longer. Come on, Caleb, really, man? You're so much better than that. I'm not saying that it surprises me that you're into that or you're fascinated by that. I'm saying that you shouldn't be calling me with that. That's neither here nor there. Did you really think that I was going to have a hot take on that or response to that or that you would finish your thought on that? Come on, man. got to be better than that. Yeah, I've done this long enough that if I want to go off the card, if I want to break format, if I want to talk about something relating to pop culture or something not relating to sports, I can. I will. But I'll pick my spots. And that's not the thing I'm going to do. Caleb, there's no time to bring something like that into my program, but especially in Smack-Off season. Not if you want to have anything to do with said Smack-Off. And I'm thinking you do, right? Let's try another one. Matt in Van. Now, here's a guy that shows up on social media, not on the phones very often, but every once in a while he will cross over and take his shot. Let's see how it goes. Matt, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, what up, Rome?
What's up?
That's a freaking weird call by Caleb, man. That's the weirdest take of the week by a mile. Hey, man, after a whole season of terrible, terrible takes about Cavs v. Warriors debate, and then the playoffs, even worse, Cavs v. Warriors debate, and we get down to last night, what do we have? The only thing left to debate is which one of their hideous fan bases is freaking uglier than the other one. Rome, onto that alcoholic pervert, Cal in Vegas. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Rome, but Cal's last call was to that fill-in host last week, and he had some scorching hot takes on the MLS. I think this pretty much confirms, Cal, you've been relegated to the D-League. Speaking of D-League, Dan in Denver, the most played-out clone in the jungle. Great, Dan. You went from hack-off to smack-off, and exactly one call later, almost got stuffed into the snacky chopper. Stiff to call in soccer-loving fill-in guest host as the Wolverine, but take that crap to the Dan Patrick Show, you insufferable bore. Rome, if you want a ticket winner who can actually show up and make some noise, grab that ticket out of Rick and Buffalo's stain-soiled sweatpants, shove it on over to me, slide it up to Van City, Rome. And to the other watch listers who think they got the game, take a little advice from Tiger's breathalyzer lady and keep blowing, keep blowing, keep blowing.
Matt in Van, you're on the line, my man. Not on the list, but on the line, all right? I may put you on the watch list, though. It is smack-off season. Let's just say that Matt, despite being on the line, if not over it right there, he did more to help his own cause than Caleb did the call before. He called Caleb's call. Yo, man, that was the weirdest call of the week. Yeah, maybe of the entire month. Maybe of the year 2017. All right, Matt, not bad. Not bad at all. What the hell, why not? Talk about a trifecta or a trilogy. Let's go three calls in one single jungle segment. Zach in Salt Lake City. Yo, what's up, bro?
Yo, Romy. How's it doing? How's it going, my man?
Good, good. Zach, how you feeling, brother?
Dude, I'm doing good. I'm just at the BK Lounge chilling with my bros. I just ordered a Whopper, and I'm about to scarf. If there's something that we can always count on, Rome, it's a delicious goodness of a Whopper and Steph Curry having the ugliest shoes on the court. This guy's game is sick AF, but his shoe game is pathetic. I blame last year's finals loss on the Curry 2s. Under Armour's making look good, feel good nearly impossible, just like the chances of the Cavs winning this series. So thanks for the bro time, Rome. Enjoy the magic glue tonight. I'm going to go activate the glutes and hike some mountains. I'm out.
Nice job, Zach. Enjoy that Whopper with the bros at the BK Lounge. Just sitting back slamming Whoppers, bro. We're joined by Shane Ray. Shane, good to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm great, man. I'm glad to be able to do what I do.
No doubt, right? I bet. Shane Ray joining me. Shane, when you consider what you do, you had 8 sacks last year, you had a big year. So you come in as a rookie, and then you make an impact, but then you take that big step last year. So let me start right there. What was the transition from college to the NFL like, and then how different was it going into your second season when you had that year under your belt?
You know, going into the NFL as a rookie, I think it varies for everyone, but I think the biggest thing for me was really understanding new techniques and understanding the pro level of football. In college, you know, it's really a lot of just athleticism and just, you know, beating guys and really just doing what you want to do. But when you get to the NFL, there's so many more things of understanding what people might be trying to do to you with formations, you know, knowing not only maybe just your coverage, but knowing where everybody else is on the field, where your health is on certain things. And those were things that I needed to learn to grow as a player. And, you know, having, you know, DeMarcus and Vaughn kind of helped me accelerate my growth a little bit. You know, they showed me how to start being a pro from day one and, you know, understanding the game of football on another level. So I think I just really took all of that and just tried to do the best that I could this, well, not this offseason, but last offseason, to make sure that when I came in for my second year that I would be the most prepared that I could have been. I was happy with my rookie year and how everything went with the Super Bowl, but as a player, I demanded so much more of myself. And, you know, going into my second season, that's where I really just wanted to start showing what I felt like I could do. And I felt like, you know, my rookie year was okay, but I really felt like I haven't been able to show people my level of play since really college. And, you know, I think last year was just me kind of showing just an example of me getting back to what I was doing then.
Broncos linebacker Shane Ray joining us. You know, Shane, you mentioned DeMarcus. DeMarcus, of course, is DeMarcus Ware. So this year he's not going to be there because he announced his retirement, but you have referred to him as something of a big brother. So what kind of things did you learn from him, and then what's it like being there without him?
Man, you know, I could honestly just go down the list of the things that I learned from DeMarcus, from, you know, taking care of my body, my eating habits, you know, my training regimen, on, you know, how I might go get acupuncture, and, you know, my diet is this, and, you know, just the outside of football things were more impactful to me than I feel like, you know, the on-the-field stuff. You know, DeMarcus was teaching me about, you know, management of this and that, and just really just kind of going in depth as a you know, a 12-year veteran who's, you know, done pretty much everything that I'm setting out to do. He shared a lot of knowledge with me on how to handle certain situations, how to look at things. And then you add on, you know, the football aspect, his knowledge of the game, teaching me, you know, pass rush every day, teaching me, you know, keys to look at things and understand. It was very helpful for me, you know, to come into the league and have a guy of his caliber share that kind of knowledge with me. You know, I really appreciated it. And, you know, with him retiring, it was difficult because, you know, like I said, you know, he's like a big brother to me and a mentor. But I felt like these past 2 years with him was really for preparation for this moment. And, you know, I don't know if he knew, you know, that he was going to retire after Super Bowl or any of that. Nobody knows that. But I feel like DeMarcus, as good of a person as he is, you know, he decided to, you know, share enough knowledge with me and share enough of the game with me that when my time came, whenever it was, that I would be prepared. And going into this season, I really feel like that I am prepared and that I'm ready to do what I need to do.
Denver linebacker Shane Ray joining us. You know, Shane, I thought you wrote a fascinating piece for the Players Tribune, and you talked about growing up in Kansas City, and in particular, the area known as the Murder Factory. And one of the stats in the zip code accounted for roughly 20% of all the inmates in Missouri locked up for murder. What was life like for you growing up in that area?
You know, for me, it was different. And, you know, I say that to say that, you know, when you grow up in an area like that, and, you know, that's kind of all you know, it really didn't click to me that, you know, this was the area that I lived in until, you know, later in life when I got older to look back on things. You know, it becomes a norm when you get to see, when you get used to seeing things of that caliber on a regular basis. You know, it kind of doesn't faze you anymore, you know. So for me, growing up and seeing all that, I really feel like it had me grow early. I had to learn about a lot of things early. I had to, you know, my mom had to prepare me for things that, you know, maybe some kids that age probably didn't have to, you know, see or be ready for, but I did. And when I look back on it, you know, I wouldn't, you know, take anything back from, you know, my upbringing and the things that I've experienced and seen, because at the end of the day, it's made me who I am. It's made my, you know, my life a story that I could, you know, share with other people and help them in their situation. You know, if there's people with, you know, similar backgrounds and things of that nature. But, you know, it was tough, but at the same time, I have to say that I had a mom that really held it down for me. You know, my mom is one of those, you know, tough, hard-nosed mothers, you know, raised me by herself and, you know, made sure that regardless on the situation of, you know, where we were living or what I didn't have or what I was trying to do, you know, my mother always pushed me to give 100%, always pushed me to be the best that I could be. So really for her, you know, she's the reason that I'm able to you know, be here now and you know, be able to live my career as a professional athlete and, you know, share my story and be who I am. So, you know, it is what it is. You know, I take it for what it is, my upbringing, but no, I wouldn't take any of it back.
Shane Ray joining us. Your mother actually made the ultimate sacrifices. You went to a private high school that she couldn't really afford, but she worked three jobs just to make sure that you got there. And Shane, there's this other great story. Like, I mean, needless to say, things were very challenging growing out of a tough divorce. You're murdered. Understandably, as a young person, you may have been dealing with some anger at one point, and you hadn't played football for a while. So she sits you down and...
You know, it really had gotten to the point where, you know, I was dealing with a lot of anger problems, and it was showing in school. It was showing in, you know, my relationship with, you know, other people and with my mother. And it got to the point where, you know, she really just was trying to find an outlet or something that she can just really just channel all of my energy and my anger into, you know, something that's a positive focus. And it's really weird how this happened. You know, the church that we were going to at the time, back in Kansas City, you know, J.J. Smith, you know, he used to play for the Chiefs back, you know, Tim Grunhard, you know, all those guys, Kansas City guys, he was at my church. And, you know, my mother was talking to J.J. about, you know, my situation. And, you know, telling him basically I needed an outlet. I needed something that I could get into possibly back into football and if J.J. knew anybody with any teams. And literally at that point, J.J. Had a team ready for me to go. He talked to Tom Shortell, who ended up being my coach at that point. Tim Grunhard ended up being my high school coach. And basically it just got organized at that point that, okay, we're going to bring him back into football, and we're going to try to do something positive for him. And my mom didn't even give me the chance to accept or deny the offer. She said, you playing football, this is the team you're about to go to. And that's what it was.
Alvy, how much time do you need to roll this thing? Better get to it right. If you're on hold, don't hang up. There's eight. I still get to you on the back end. But whatever you have to say is not nearly as important as what Alvin has to say.
Racing!
I am. What's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. A very good Tuesday to you. I hope you had a good holiday weekend. So good to be back, and I've got a very busy first hour. So let's not waste any time with it. Starting with Tiger.
Hey.
You know, it seems impossible to think, but the guy actually looks worse off the course than he does on it.
Not to sing the national anthem backwards.
Brave the home, the free, the land, the four. Nailed it. Can I go now? But whatever was left of this dude's image is torched. And for as bad as that mugshot was, the police report is even worse.
It's all in the police report.
I love that whole spin. Hey, just so y'all know, it was not alcohol. Oh, why didn't you say it wasn't alcohol? Carry on, Kat. I want to know what he blew on the pillalizer. I'm saying don't get behind the wheel of
a car
under the influence. You know what? I still hate this guy. I'm going to dot him in the hip, and if he's got a problem with it and wants to come out here in my office, I'm going to punch him in the face.
Harper's charging them out.
Talk about making a guy flinch. I mean, I would, too, if I thought a helmet was coming to my head.
He throws the helmet,
but he almost threw it into the seat. Eddie Olczyk, what did you make of what you saw, and did the better team win last night?
Second question first, no. The Nashville Predators were the better team. The best team doesn't always win.
We're talking to Zaza Pachulia. What's your biggest concern about the Cavaliers, and what's the biggest challenge you face as a team?
We have to worry about ourselves, and as far as we come out and perform and play our game, I like our chances to win this title.
Tigers don't let Tigers. Staying up all night.
Tiger's on the pipe. He would not be nodding out at the wheel.
Wasn't Odom on the pipe?
Odom's on the pipe.
I knew it. Rick Spielman joining us for a few more moments. What do you think it's going to feel like to see him on your field in the opposing team's colors?
It'll be awkward, to say the least. Amazing how that works out.
What do you make of that?
Yeah.
But Tom and God, first stop off a 9-month layoff. Too good. Beat Midnight
Great
Pleasure.
To see you back in the winner's circle.
Kicking the ass and punching the face. At the top of the world and then the bottom of the world. The distance between those two things is not that far. Jeff Pearlman.
I like Carl's Jr. the most.
What? Come on!
Is that horrible?
It's not good. What separates Carl's from the others that I just mentioned?
The fresh baked bun, man.
I'm not only taking the Cavs, I'm taking the Cavs in five. Again, sure I'm not. Warriors in five. Patrick Peterson joining us. And then under areas of concern, it simply said, quote, none. So what do you think when you see that?
It's a bunch of little things I believe I can improve on. Like, you know, my pat level when I'm in my off man.
From Maui to Honolulu on a small flight, giant bird went through the windshield, covered me in blood and guts. And I'm like, I'm dead. I went to heaven. This is incredible. I said, Dad, I think I'm dying. He's like, you're not dying, dummy. That's a bird all over you. Kevin Kisner is my guest.
It's weird, Jim. You're so in the moment. You're so into what you got to do. You finally do it, and it's over, and everything's done in about 2 seconds. And you're like, damn, I just won.
The smack-off cannot end with the Cato Kalin of the jungle as the reigning champ.
Time to die.
Set a date, Jim. Time is short.
You're just driving around, or what?
I like to drive.
You like to drive. So do I. But not in the middle of the night on meds. You like to drive. And pot. Chip, where's Allie when I need her for a driver joke?
Not to know when to use a driver. Am I right?
Whoa!
Thanks.
Kevin and Bean, Allie, and what's his face? How lucky is it that he didn't run down any peds on that sidewalk? Man, Billy Joel thought he was off the hook too, didn't he? Finally, some other celebrity who drove into a house. Sorry, William. We were joined by TJ Watt.
Watching all the, I always say, the badass defenses coming up through my early years and watching football.
But then there's the tradition of being a Steeler linebacker.
Just trying to learn as much as possible and try to become one of those badass type players.
Twitter. Blow the whistle and let them play, Pam. Bring the hacks in. Hackle.
How's that catfish taste?
I'm more.
I don't really have one, Jim.
Meet some meds.
I left you caught it last night. Carlos Martinez. I've seen Scooby-Doo villains with better hairdos.
Right, so you want me to bring back the hack off I did. How'd you like that? Jake Lamb.
Anytime you rock some cutoff jean shorts, you're pretty high in my book. Quick story. I got on Greinke and I made it public that he was the worst dresser on the team. And so he came out hot for that trip. Yeah, Greinke was definitely the best.
You call 1-800-DENTIST.
Three to the right corner. Durant. Can you elaborate on that?
They're the best I've ever seen.
Ty's like, what elaboration do you need? I just said they were the best team I've ever seen.
Wait a minute. Lee Jenkins from Sports Illustrated?
What if this is now that Lakers-Bulls series? Jordan kind of taking that mantle from Magic and running with it. It looks like it could be a runaway train.
Listened to the jungle for over 20 years. The takes on that tennis player, Aronte Chick from the Barrio.
Email.
Hey, boss. When Train come on the radio, I change the station. Log Alvey.
Keep flowing.
Robert Lucetich is my guest.
Always good to be in the jungle, Romy. And sadly, it's not about what's going on with his golf game these days, but just what's become of it.
We are joined by Shane Ray.
Glad to be able to do what I do.
Quote, I sucked. I was chunky and slow.
Just work ethic, man. You know, my mother working three jobs. It stuck with me in football.
Ordered a Whopper, and I'm about to scarf.
Mary Kay Lapervo.
What is the shortest flight you have ever slipped into your jammies for?
A little.
Javier's is one of my favorite restaurants.
But nobody will see them. Right.
Right. Hashtag pull out stuff.
Show a little listener to you.
Donuts.
YNC.
Good night now!
It's an incredible way to end the week. Clones, by now you know the drill. Hit subscribe, tell a friend, trust the podcast. Thanks for listening, and I will see you right back here on Monday for more Daily Jungle.